Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. You know, patient advocates are, what would we call them? We call them professionals who help people get the medical care they need from an, I would say, often bewildering healthcare system. And we have a couple of experts today to talk with you about this whole area. Angie Ingraham is a former trauma and critical care surgeon who founded True North Patient Advocates. And Angie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Larry. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate having you here. Chris Van Haren was a pharmacist. I think probably both of you guys are still practicing or could be practicing. Let's put it that way. You're licensed.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Van Haren, a former pharmacist who now specializes in insurance and billing advocacy. And she is the founder of A Better Way Professional Health Advocacy, LLC, both of them are. And Chris, good to have you here.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
As we talk with our experts, I hope you'll join in the conversation. Have you been frustrated with your medical care in one way or another? Or if you have you had some problems with maybe getting an insurance claim turned down or getting the kind of care you need? I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email to talk@wpr.org. Well, both of you have had careers in healthcare, now work with patients in different areas and capacities. Maybe we can start by talking about what led you, each of you, to what you're doing now. Angie, let's start with you.
Sure. So I was a professor at UW and Department of Surgery for nearly 10 years. When just about 5 years ago now, my dad got diagnosed with a brain cancer.
Oh.
And he, thank you for that. You know, he got different care, not only because he had an advocate by his side in me and my brother, who also was a physician, but because we had knowledge of the medical system. You know, he got access to different tests. He got different care. His transitions of care between hospital and rehab and home went more smoothly because he had somebody there. And it's just something that has stuck with me. And, you know, I said if we're struggling with this because we have the finances and the means and the education and the time, I know other people are too. And I actually found out about professional patient advocacy through Chris and through the Wisconsin Patient Partner Group at UW that Meg Gaines founded as well. So It's a whole world, and we're excited to be here to share knowledge and experiences with the audience today.
Yeah, great. Chris, what about you? You were a pharmacist, or
I'm still licensed.
Yeah. You're still licensed,
just in case. So Angie represents probably about half of our certified advocates across the country who come to advocacy because of a loved one who had some medical issues, and they want to share what they've learned now with others. And of course, Angie has, you know, additional expertise in the medical field. I actually came to advocacy in probably the other half of the way the other half did, which is because I was a pharmacist, part of the medical team, I saw people fall through the cracks. And I thought, there's got to be a better way to do this, hence the name of my business. And so I transitioned by going to the Center for Patient Partnerships here and under Meg Gaines. Fantastic program. Unfortunately, they no longer take non-traditional students like me. But great program, taught me a lot. I thought things I thought I knew. They taught me a different way. And so I come at this from the background of a part of the healthcare team, but also just trying to share my experience and my expertise in that form.
Well, it's great to have you both here, and you're doing wonderful work, that's for sure. And Fred Nalma has a question for you. Let's just turn there. Fred, thank you for calling.
Good morning. The reason I was calling is yesterday I was going to do some refills on some of my medication, and one that I'd been getting for many years, but I was surprised when the cost to me went up by an order of magnitude. I was paying roughly $15 for a 90-day supply, and it is now over $140 for the same amount of drugs. I'm on Medicare and have purchased, you know, a drug plan that I was on last year, and I'm still on this year. So what my question really is there anything that I can do to effectively complain about this tremendously steep increase?
Yeah. Well, let's turn to Angie first. Or Chris.
I think Chris. This is right up Chris's alley. I can help, but Chris can help much
all right,
more.
Chris, we go to you.
So, first of all, Fred, thank you so much for calling in today. Can I ask you what the pharmacist told you when you picked up your medication this last time?
Well, what I have been doing is using a mail order service.
Okay. So nobody contacted you. It was just a surprise.
Yeah.
It was a surprise.
Okay.
And then so I went and I did a pricing search of this drug on their website, and they list a number of local pharmacies like Walgreens, mm-hmm. CVS, where I can go and pick it up, but the price is essentially the same.
Yeah.
I tried searching for a local pharmacy, and nothing would come up.
Okay. So a couple of things. This could be for a number of different reasons. At the beginning of the year, drug plans, including Medicare drug plans, often have a deductible that needs to be met before you can go back to whatever your standard copays were. So it's possible that you have a deductible that needs to be met first. And once you meet that deductible, that price will go down from now on through the end of the year. The only way you're going to know that is to look at the details of your prescription plan, your Part D plan. Sounds like you have traditional Medicare plus a Part D, or do you have a Medicare Advantage plan?
No, that's what you first said is what
okay.
I have.
Okay, mm-hmm. Okay. So it's important to find that information about your plan and whether they have a deductible or not to meet. Probably the best way to do that is to access your Medicare Part D card that they sent you and call the customer service number on the back of that.
Yeah. That might be the quick way.
That's the quickest. Well, I don't know if it's quick anymore. It might be the quickest way. It's unfortunate that they don't list any local pharmacies for you, but that could be why the price doesn't change depending on what you're searching for, is because you might have that deductible to meet first. That's probably the most likely thing. The other option is that some pharmacies are no longer in network, even though you have the same plan. The networks can change, but because you're doing mail order, that sounds like that's not the issue here.
Yeah. Well, Fred, good luck. Take a look at that plan, and at least hopefully it'll work out the way Chris is talking about here. At least you. Sometimes, what would it be? $500 or something?
Oh, who knows? They're
who
all
knows?
Different. Yeah. I'm sorry. There's one more potential option that if it's a, depending on the medication, there are formulary changes that Medicare D and other prescription drug plans do every single year. In fact, they happen throughout the year. They don't happen just once a year. And it's possible that the medication you are getting is no longer on their formulary, or it has done something they call changing tiers, where it's a different cost depending on what level they put that medication at. Again, it's less likely that that's the option, but again, it's a good question to ask when you call the Medicare D plan. The customer service number is to ask if you have a deductible to meet, and then also ask if this is in the formulary and what tier it's at.
And Fred, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email the talk at WPR.org. Is this the kind of thing that you, one aspect, I guess, of what you do?
One of many.
Yeah.
So patient advocates cover a wide range of services.
Let's talk about those services.
Sure. So everything really is tailored to our client. It can be help finding a doctor. So if you need a second opinion, helping to identify appropriate doctors for you to go and see. It can help with preparing for doctor's appointments, going with clients to doctor's appointments, making summaries of the doctor's appointments, helping to coordinate care after a doctor's appointment, helping with transitions of care. So I've had clients who are in the hospital, then they're going to the rehab, then they may be going to an assisted living or going to home. As independent patient advocates, we work for the client, and so then we travel with the client across all those different states and those different locations, and we can travel across systems. So it doesn't matter if you're with hospital B for this doctor and hospital A for that doctor, we can go with you because we work with the client, not for the hospital or the healthcare system.
And you can do it virtually, too? I mean, a lot of it's probably virtual.
Absolutely.
Yep. So advocates are not licensed in a state, so we can work across the United States. But there is a board certification for patient advocacy, which involves a test and continuing education to make sure that we're providing services in a professional and ethical manner.
So somebody might say, well, I'm drowning in healthcare costs. Can I afford? How can you afford to hire, in a way, let's put it the general way, how can you afford to hire a patient advocate?
Sure. It just depends on what your needs are. I've had many people contact me with medical debt that they don't know what to do with. I just talked to someone yesterday who said, I believe all of my medical debt is now in collections, in multiple different collection agencies. I get phone calls every day. I get mail. I'm so overwhelmed. I don't even open it anymore. I set it aside. And I get it. That's what happens. We get overwhelmed and we ignore it. We wait for something to happen and hope that it's going to be good. So what I recommended for her was to set aside a time based on her capacity, her ability to process everything, focus on just collecting all that mail and emails if that's part of it, open them up, see what they say, see where things are, and we can address it from there. So with medical debt, there's sometimes options for financial assistance through collection agencies, depending on how they operate, and through the medical facilities. If somebody has debt of, say, $50,000 and it's going to take me, 10 hours to fix it, and rates, rates vary across advocates. So some of us have sliding scales. I actually have some pro bono slots. They're fillable right now. but that changes periodically. But if we're talking about $50,000 and let's say, I don't even know how many hours, because 10 hours isn't a very rough estimate. I often think 10 and then it takes 20. So let's say that you have $50,000 and you're paying $10,000 for somebody to address that, which I think is high. But let's just say if you're able to bring that down in some way, shape or form to where you're owing, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, you've saved yourself money in the long run. So you kind of have to assess where you're at and what your needs are. And I do a free consultation, free 15-minute consultation. So, we can talk that over and see if it's worth it for you to hire me.
Yeah.
No pressure.
Yeah. Angie, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I just had a client the other day, a son of a woman who had an inpatient rehab stay denied. And they had submitted an appeal, and they lost that appeal, and they were debating whether or not to submit the second appeal when I got engaged with them. And they submitted the appeal, and they won. And his comment to me was, you've just proven your model, you've proven your worth, because they would have owed all of that money out of private pay if they hadn't won that appeal, and they wouldn't have submitted the appeal without my help and my encouragement. So, you know, we are here to help people get the best possible health care that they can. We're also here to alleviate some of the stress, overwhelm, burden, confusion. It's just too much right now because our healthcare system is so complicated, and there is help out there for you and your family.
Well, we have callers online, and we will get to those folks. Maddie and DePere, we'll get to you in a minute or two here. The number for you to call in, and we do have some open lines to get you on pretty quickly, 800-642-1234, or if you'd like, you could email us. We have some emails as well. Email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Just a quick note, Dr. Zorba Pastor will be joining us at the top of the hour to talk about a whole variety of issues. Right now, we're visiting with Angie Ingraham, who's a former trauma and critical care surgeon. She founded True North Patient Advocates. And Chris Van Herren is a former pharmacist who now specializes in insurance and billing advocacy as the founder of A Better Way Professional Health Advocacy. And again, join in, numbers 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. Let's go to Maddie and DePere. Maddie, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have extreme dry eye disease, and generally speaking, I'm happy with my insurance company, but they do not cover MIBO, and my bowl, from what I understand, has some kind of oil in it that helps to the eyes to stay moist longer. And so I'm really concerned that I might go blind someday because of the, I guess the, when you have extreme eye disease, sometimes it's caused by the poor quality of your tears. My eye doctor tested my tears. I do have inflammation in my tears. And So she just was approved to have to do a $2,000 procedure to put a film over my eye to protect it, to give it time to heal. And to me, that's like penny wise and pound foolish for the insurance company to not pay for the $200 a month MIBO for me.
How's that spelled, by the way? By MIBO?
I'm not sure. It's like M-I-B-O-L? E-B-B-O-W.
Okay.
I see it advertised on TV.
Got it. Okay, well.
So that's a prescription, Maddie?
Yeah. That's a prescription.
Okay.
Eye drop.
Okay.
I'm not, $200 a month.
There are lots of newer ones I'm not familiar with. Sorry.
Yes,
first of all, Maddie, I'm
so
sorry.
It's M-I-B-O-W.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Maddie, I'm so sorry that you're dealing with this. It's so frustrating. Like you said, penny wise and pound foolish. I completely agree with that. I think, so this is something that you can definitely talk to your eye doctor about. There are probably other medications that may work as well. As with the previous caller where I mentioned the possibility of a drug not being on the formulary with your insurance, it's entirely possible and probable that in this case, that's what's going on. They may cover other medications that work similarly to this medication. So I would definitely talk to your eye doctor and see if they can switch it to one that is on your formulary. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes sense to me. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think the other thing, and Chris, I'd like to get your thoughts on this too. You know, there are some drug discount programs. So we've been talking about going and getting access to your medications through your insurance. But there are some, you know, some of the manufacturers have discount programs so that they can reduce the cost of prescriptions. Now, it is important to note that sometimes those programs are only for a limited amount of time. So it's not that it's an indefinite reduction of the cost of your medication, but that sometimes can also be a way to lower costs cost of your medications, and pharmacists are a great resource to help you identify those programs as well.
Yeah. Previously, when I was working as a pharmacist, we weren't necessarily aware of those. So advocates are still the best way to find those programs. But Angie's absolutely right. That is a possibility. They do tend to be for medications that are for serious chronic illnesses. This is a pretty specific illness that you have, disease state that you have. And so I'm not sure if that would be available for this or not. But certainly worth checking with your doctor as well.
And stay listening, Maddie, because Phyllis in Winona, Minnesota has something to say about MIBO.
Hi. Okay, first of all, it's M-I-E-B-O is the prescription.
Okay.
And I am on that same medication, and honestly, it is very helpful, and I don't know if there's anything else quite like it. To get it through my insurance, and I'm sure all insurance is different, but on mine, I had to have a prior authorization from my doctor, so they had to say, I've tried this, that, and the other thing, and they didn't work, and then finally my insurance would cover it. But in the meanwhile, while I was trying to wait for that to happen, I found basically the same product available online from somewhere overseas, and I don't know whether you guys recommend that or not. It was called Hycosan Shield, H-Y-C-O-S-A-N Shield. And the ingredients seemed to be the same. You know, I felt fairly comfortable using it, you know, and I think it's the same product. But, I mean, I guess if someone's really desperate, that's an alternative that they consider if their insurance absolutely will not cover it.
So, Philly, I wish you could have seen the collective gasp between Angie and I when you mentioned ordering something online. Ordering things online can be very helpful, and they can also be very dangerous. And the problem is we don't know which one it's going to be until we start using it. I'm glad that you found relief. That's fantastic. You do bring up a couple of good points. When you talk about prior authorization, that is often required when drugs are not on the formulary, and sometimes it's required even when they are on the formulary. So it's important to contact your prescription drug insurance coverer to find out what needs to be done. And if that's not something you can do, have your doctor's office do it. The second point is that you were able to get the MIBO approved after what's called step therapy. You have to try and fail usually 2 to 3 other medications before they will cover it. Still requires a prior authorization, but you do have to go through those steps first. It has to be documented in your medical chart. It has to be a certain amount of time, even sometimes. So 3 months, 6 months, a year. So yes, excellent points. Thank you so much for bringing all of this up. And I'm glad that you're finally on it and you're finding relief.
Yeah. Phyllis, thank you very much for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Kent in Reedstown emailed, I don't know if you can answer this, wonders if you can explain what Medicare for All would look like.
The phrase Medicare for All means different things to different people. Mm-hmm. Some people call it Medicare for All. Some people call it universal health care. Mm-hmm. Some people call it, I don't even know. There are lots of names for it. And they truly mean different things to different people. So there are lots of nuances to Medicare. It's a bigger discussion than just getting our health care. It has to do with reimbursement for physicians, reimbursement for pharmacies. It has to do with the stability of the entire healthcare system based on payments, based on all kinds of things. So while I completely agree with the people who say our system is 100% broken, I don't know what the answer is. And I don't know. I really can't speak to that piece. I don't know if Angie, you have a...
Yeah,
no, idea.
I mean, I think it's in general, it's an idea where we provide the same type of coverage to everyone, even though you may not be of age to qualify for Medicare. And I think, you know, as we talk about insurances, one kind of light bulb moment that I had when I was learning about Medicare is, you know, we have traditional Medicare where someone has a Part A and a B plan and a D is a drug plan. And then there's this Part C, which are the Medicare Advantage plans. And really what a Medicare Advantage plan is the government has given these private companies, you know, such as Humana or UHC, the private insurance companies, the money to provide health insurance for the people who sign up for those plans. So Medicare for All is just kind of like a different way of providing coverage to a larger number of people who are outside typically of that Medicare age.
Yeah. Makes sense. Alice emailed to ask you to talk about the good prescription types of plans. The good ones. Oh, GoodRx. GoodRx type of plans. And how did they work?
So GoodRx is not an insurance plan. It's a coupon program. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have used it to bring down the costs of their medication. They have a database on their website that will show you what the average price is and what the price is with their coupon. Again, there's a lot of nuance behind it as far as who gets paid what. It may save you money. It may also be not paying the pharmacy even the cost, not even covering the cost of the drug sometimes. And that happens with insurance companies too, where they don't even cover the cost of the drug, but they bring the price down for you, which is great and not sustainable in the long run. So the issue with using GoodRx is that, again, this is everything has a but or a caveat. So if it's a medication that you're paying $200 for as a copay, and it's never going to change, it's going to be a $200 copay all year, and GoodRx has it for $50, well, I would do that, right? The thing is, if you have that deductible to meet, and if you have that maximum out of pocket after which your insurance company pays for 100% of that drug, anything that you run through GoodRx that you pay the GoodRx price does not get applied to that. So if your drug costs $200 this month and $200 next month, and now you've met your max out of pocket for the year, you're not going to pay any more for that for the rest of the year. If you're going to use that GoodRx coupon every month, you're paying $50 per month times 12 months. Yeah. You're going to pay more for it in the long run. So it's really
running the numbers.
Yep. And again, you may need the pharmacist help with that. You may need an advocate's help with that. You may need your doctor's office help with that. Whoever can assist you in doing that. Maybe a family member. You know, my mantra is everybody needs an advocate. And sometimes those advocates start out to be family members and friends.
Yeah. I was looking at some numbers, and I'm not sure if these are exact, but 12% of Wisconsinites have medical debt collection.
That's probably a low number.
Probably. Oh, my goodness. So you probably both have to deal with that in one fashion or another.
It's a topic of discussion no matter what you're dealing with, no matter what you're talking about. That's always in the back of people's minds. Yeah. How am I going to pay for this?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know that the actual statistic, but we know that medical debt is a leading, if not the leading cause of bankruptcy in the United States.
Yes.
You know, and so part of our role is to help clients and their families navigate through that, get the things that the insurance company should be covered.
Right.
Because it's not always easy. I mean, you know, to give a real world example, I have a client who had a stroke, has partial paralysis. So he has weakness on one side of the body, and we're in a process of getting an appeal for his wheelchair. You know, there are some basic things that everyday folks are struggling to get coverage for, when it's a required and necessary and should be covered through their insurance. And so we're here to help with all of that.
How could that not be covered?
That's a great question.
What little writer in small print at the bottom of the paper of your insurance company would say, oh, and by the way, if you can't walk, we're not going to provide you a wheelchair.
Right. When we talked to the vendor of the wheelchair company, the company that supplies the wheelchair, they said that the insurance company that we were going through, they always deny, and that we always have to have an appeal. But the lay public doesn't know. Sometimes you don't know that you can appeal, or you don't know that if you lose your first appeal, you can submit a second appeal, and a lot of people actually win their second appeals. But it takes knowing the process. It can take knowing what words to include in the appeal. And it takes time and energy, and you know, that's something that is at a scarcity right now. So
yeah, and I'm just thinking about this goes back a few weeks, but I was talking to some friends who are elderly and had gotten a turn down, but then the paperwork involved.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He finally just said, "All right."
And the insurance companies count on that.
Yeah. You know, I will say that it's not always the insurance company, though. So the very brief story of kind of why I got into advocacy was started with an experience with my dad. So my dad had a surgery scheduled for a Wednesday. He had surgery scheduled for Wednesday. He had an MRI scheduled for Tuesday. And Monday at 3:00, we got a call saying that his MRI was canceled because we didn't have prior authorization. So I kept them on the phone for 2 hours. I moved the MRI to the afternoon. The only thing that got us to that MRI was that his PCP was a friend that I went to medical school with, so I texted her.
Mm.
Once the paperwork got submitted, the insurance company approved it right away. In that case, it wasn't the insurance company denying the MRI. It was that the hospital system hadn't submitted the paperwork that was needed to the insurance company. And so a lot of what advocates do and that we help with is all of that care coordination, because there are so many moving parts to keep everything straight and to make sure that things are getting done to make these care plans and these the things that need to happen to have people get care go smoothly. Like, that's a lot of what we do.
That's a really good point, Angie. There's a lot of breakdown in communication,
mm-hmm.
whether it's verbal communication, written communication, faxed communication, e-prescribed communication, mm-hmm. whatever it is. There's a huge breakdown because, let's face it, we had a mass exodus of the healthcare system after COVID. And so we're short-staffed. Everybody is short-staffed. And so things get dropped. And they get missed and they get set aside and forgotten, and not on purpose. Mm-hmm. They're just overwhelmed. The entire healthcare system is overwhelmed right now. And the patients are the ones who get left holding the ball and holding the financial responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so we're here to walk alongside people and, you know, facilitate that communication for better care for people. So agreed, Angie.
Annette in Green Bay has question, I believe. Annette, hi.
Yes, hi, Larry, and your guest. My question is in regard to the amount that either the doctors or hospitals charge, say, for any kind of procedure. And for sake of argument, it's $100, and the insurance company, Medicare or whomever, say, well, we're only going to pay $20. And the medical community accepts that $20, that $80 differential, what becomes of that differential? Is that a tax write-off so they don't pay taxes? Or why do they charge such a high rate when they know they're only going to get reimbursed about a quarter of it?
That's a great question. That is a great question, Annette. Do you mind if I take a stab at that?
Yeah.
Okay. So
go ahead, Chris.
So it's kind of a game of cat and mouse. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the hospital says we're going to charge $100, and let's pick Blue Cross Blue Shield. Blue Cross Blue Shield says we will send our patients to you. We will put you in network if you accept only $50 for this instead of $100. And they get to decide, the hospital gets to decide, okay, we do or we don't want to. Is it worth it? Again, run the numbers. So if they only get half of what they're charging, they're going to increase their rate so they get half of a higher rate. And it's going in circles.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe, and I don't know this for sure, but I don't believe there's a tax write-off. It's just what's in their contract. And that's why it's so confusing for hospital billing departments and all billing departments, too, is they don't know what the what's in the contract. They only know what the information they get back from the insurance company. So even the new thing with, you know, everybody has to have an estimate available for what their care is going to be. That depends on the accuracy of what information the insurance company is giving you back. It depends on whether the deductible's been met. It depends on all kinds of things. There are a lot of places, a lot of room for error. So it depends on the contract. It depends on which contract they're billing through. So they may have a separate one through UHC, which says they'll get $30, not $50. So it's this, yeah, it's this big circle that just keeps going around and around because everybody's trying to get their piece of the pie, right? And the hospitals need to be paid enough to cover their expenses and, you know, in order to stay sustainable. If we don't have hospitals that are sustainable, we have nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm. How many hospitals do we have in the state? 175, 180?
There is something like that. And small hospitals in rural settings are closing because they're being eaten up by larger conglomerates, or private equity, which is a whole other discussion.
I was thinking about that because you've got, what's the percentage? About 28% of the people in the state live in rural areas. And only about 11% of the doctors work in rural areas. At least I looked that up before the show, and I think that those are accurate, pretty accurate figures.
Yeah.
Again, that's a whole other discussion about access to care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how do we really keep patients, you know, patients and families want to stay local. They want to get their care locally when they can. And so one of the things that the major academic or the major tertiary centers, the higher level of care centers is doing is, you know, how can we keep patients to get the quality care that they need and deserve in their rural communities? Because guess what? The major centers are all full. They don't have the capacity to have patients be transferred from their rural hospital into a higher level of care. Because there's no room in the inn. So a lot of the efforts in Wisconsin hospital systems, I've talked to the leadership at these institutions, is how do the major centers partner better with the rural hospitals so that patients can still get good care but get it closer to home.
Yeah, and I saw some. You've done some research on this as well.
Yeah.
I can remember some of them. I mean, like 45% of all the transfers that go on in the state go to UW hospitals?
Yeah. So there was one study we did of emergency general surgery patients. So patients with appendicitis or gallbladder problems or skin and soft tissue infections. And UW actually accepted patients from 70 different hospitals, all coming to UW for those different diagnoses. And so we did a lot of research on how to improve the care coordination and communication that happens between the referring hospitals and providers and the accepting hospitals and providers at UW.
It's an amazing, amazing figure. Our guest today, Angie Ingraham, is a former trauma and critical care surgeon, founded True North Patient Advocates. And Chris Van Haren, a former pharmacist, now specializes in insurance and billing advocacy and is the founder of A Better Way Professional Health Advocacy. Our guest. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. You could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining in today as we talk with some medical patient advocates. Angie Ingraham, her business, True North Patient Advocates, and Chris Van Haren, former pharmacist, who's founder of A Better Way Professional Health Advocacy. Barry in Madison has something. Let's go there. Hi, Barry.
Good morning. I just want to expand on the question about the definition of Medicare for All. Medicare for All essentially means that the government, through additional taxes, would pay for everybody's health insurance. And one of the big advantages of that is that obviously you can go to any doctor. Everybody is covered. You don't end up going bankrupt because of excessive costs. And right now, if I'm not mistaken, the cost to insurance companies for doing their work on covering expenses or parts of expenses is approaching 40% of the costs. So I think people ought to be, I guess, a little bit more aware of what Medicare for All is, especially since most of the major economic countries in the world with advanced economies like ours, almost all of them have free health insurance.
Yeah. Thoughts or comments? Chris, you want to take a stab?
I just want to say that thank you for your comments, Barry. I appreciate that. I appreciate you expanding on that discussion for us. Unfortunately, in the U.S., I can't speak for other countries, but in the U.S., when we talk about healthcare, we can't do it anymore without talking about politics as well. They've been inextricably
linked,
intertwined. Yes. So that's a bigger issue. Clearly, it's unfortunate because we should be focusing on humanity and treating each other as human beings. And I think healthcare is a human right versus anything else. So yeah. It's a very big discussion. I think it's going to go on for a while. I don't know if you have anything to add, Angie.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think it's we really do need all parties coming together to solve this issue. It can't be just the politicians. It has to be many different facets that have their hands in these pots and influence this to come together to really make meaningful change in healthcare.
Barry, again, thank you for calling. Dana in Manitowoc, we'll turn to you. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for opening my eyes to a new service out there for patients. I'm a palliative care home-based RN case manager in Manitowoc, so one of our rural communities, and 100% agree with you. This is a service that is much needed, in our culture today. The other thing that I just wanted to share that I haven't heard you talk about yet are just some other resources that are out there for seniors if they're listening. That would be the Aging and Disability Resource Center in their county, as well as their senior center. Both have outstanding people who can help you get started and answer basic questions and point you to individuals with more training as needed. But thank you for what you guys are doing. It's definitely needed as a case manager in a small rural town. Definitely there's lack of help for patients, and I'm glad to learn about a new resource for patients. So,
Well, Dana, thank you very much for calling. Comments?
Yeah, thanks, Dana, and thank you for what you do. I think you bring up a lot of really great points, and one of them for me is, you know, we as patient advocates, we partner with other people who do similar things like we do. So if we were engaged with a client, we would be partnering with you if you also worked with that same client and family. This is a very much a collaborative profession. We are here not only to support the client and the family, but also to support the providers, to support the nurses, to support the caregivers, to support the home health or home care providers. It very much is, I like to think about it as like forming a little cocoon around the client and the family and bringing all the different pieces together to support their health and their healthcare journey. And you are totally right. There are so many wonderful resources out there specifically for seniors and other populations. But the ADRC is a great and place to start, as well as your local senior center.
Agreed. Yeah, awesome. I just want to say, too, I'm going to echo Angie and say thank you so much, Dana, for all that you do in your roles. We appreciate you. And I'm sure your clients do as well. So the other piece that I want to mention is that we don't just work for seniors. Mm-hmm. Most of my clients are actually under 40. So we advocate for people of all ages for lots of different reasons. So,
and I'm wondering, let's say Dana or somebody in Dana's in Manitowoc, for example, is if there is not a professional such as yourselves, are you do you work outside? I mean, maybe via online or in some other fashion than maybe. I know you, you work a lot directly with a person, but wondering about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, our services can be provided virtually. So I've had clients in Iowa and New York State. I have clients in Ohio. And the, I think the other thing to note, and we can link this to the show notes, is that there are databases out there of professional patient advocates. So, you know, the our show, your show is being streamed across the nation. People can find people in their own local area if they want by looking at some of these databases that are organized by professional patient advocacy organizations as well.
So do you have that? Do you have the way to get that information?
Yep, yep. We can definitely provide that to you.
If you can provide that to us
absolutely.
Soon after the show, we can post that. A copy of this show will be up in 2 hours after the show is over.
Yep, absolutely.
So if you can send that to me, our Joel Patnod, right away, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
And most of my work is virtual. I don't do a lot in person. Most of my work is virtual, and there are so many things that we can do virtually that, that don't need. Sometimes it's really helpful to have that person boots on the ground,
yep.
right? No questions. But if you don't have anybody local, the next best thing is virtual.
Ann in Madison, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I was just wondering if people with insurance get billed a higher or the costs of a procedure are higher than what it could be. What about if you don't have insurance? What kind of bill will you get?
Unfortunately, you get that $100 bill where the insurance only, one insurance agrees to pay $50 for it, one insurance agrees to pay $30. You as the patient get charged $100 for that. So, which is why I, you know, in a lot of cases, depending on your income, there's the ability to negotiate that sometimes. And I hesitate to say negotiate because that sounds like everything is you know, a tag sale, a garage sale, and you can name your price. But that's not the case. But there is some flexibility sometimes depending on your financial status. So,
yeah. And Mary, do you have a quick question for us?
Yes, I did, and I'll be real quick. Just a comment. My husband and I are under 60. We have what I consider fairly good workplace insurance. This is more about the hospital and the clinic and the coding system. Just real quick, my husband's required to have yearly colonoscopies as long as they're medically necessary. We meet with the surgeon, which is, you know, time for him, time for us. We get the codes all set, and then somewhere through the loop of the clinic and hospital billing, they will slap a screening on top of what was supposed to be just a medically necessary procedure.
In 15 or 20 seconds?
Yeah, that's something you need to talk to the billing department about. You can talk to your insurance company first to find out which codes they cover and how they cover them, and then talk to billing and say, this is what's covered. Can you help me understand and potentially change
corrected.
Depending on right, depending on what's going on?
Right.
That makes sense. And it's been a pleasure talking with you both. Thank you so much. We'll get you back and do this again.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Angie Ingraham is, her business is True North Patient Advocates. Chris Van Herren, her business is A Better Way Professional Health Advocacy. And you can see why it would be very useful to have them or somebody like them working for you when it comes to this kind of situation with our medical system. And speaking of medical system, Dr. Zorba Pastor is coming up next, and we'll talk about, among other things, the new dietary guidelines.